Howdy folks, welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast. My name's Shane. A huge thanks to everybody who subscribed via iTunes or any podcatcher to the full podcast, which goes up also at inthebluespodcast.com. If you do have iTunes, you can simply subscribe by searching for In the Blues and it will absolutely turn up. Also check the description of the video if you are watching on YouTube. 2016's almost a wrap. This year has gone so fast. So I wanted to firstly thank all the subscribers on YouTube, anyone who supports me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. My Instagram's a little bit different. I kind of chuck up some personal stuff on there. Nothing too personal, but pictures of the beach and guitars, whereas my Facebook page, I guess, is more geared towards the gear, which is understandable. It's up to about 7,000 people now. So thanks to everyone who supports that, as well as the In the Blues Tone shop. Can't thank you enough. It's helped me get through this year without having to beg for money through other means. So I absolutely appreciate that. Now, the first thing I want to have a chat about is replacing speakers in a Hot Rod Deluxe or Blues Deluxe or any of these amplifiers that have a single 12. Now, the process is a lot easier than you might think. A lot of people ask me, do they need to drain the caps? Do they need to rebias the amp afterwards? What's the easiest way of getting the speaker in and out? All that kind of stuff. So I thought I'd go through what I know about the Blues Deluxe. My friend Brian has this process down to about 8 minutes. He can swap speakers out extremely fast in his amps now. He's done it a million times too. So the more you do it, the more confident you'll get at it and the faster you'll be at it without having to do anything. So basically, the first question I get asked a lot is about rebiasing the amp. You don't need to worry about any of that. All you're doing is replacing the speaker. As long as the terminals, you make note of which terminal's going where. If they're not color-coded, red is always positive, and the black one is the negative, or it might be white. So just make note of where they are on the speaker. If they're not actually labeled, put a little dash on the negative or put a little dash on the positive, whatever you think is easier to remember for yourself. Now, in terms of the caps, all I can suggest is don't put your fingers or a screwdriver in the head. If you're doing that, you're probably asking for some trouble. Make sure the amp's unplugged. If it was plugged in, turn it on and unplug it. That's a good way of draining the caps. I'm pretty sure that works. I'm not an electronics engineer, but I have heard that through some reliable sources that draining the caps that way will also work. That said, it's not essential. So you're just basically replacing the speaker. You take the head out, you put it aside, replace the speaker, put the head back. You don't need to mess with any of that stuff, so don't stress. It's a nice, simple process. With most of the Fender amps, you basically are unscrewing the whole back. So generally, the screws are on the side of the amplifiers. Same with Blues Juniors as well. They're very, very easy amps to take apart. There's one thing to take note of, though. There is some shielding across one of the sections of the amplifier. Just make sure you don't go messing with that or tear it or pull it up off where it's stuck down to. Just be careful putting it back in that it doesn't it looks like aluminium foil or aluminum foil, depending on where you're from. So basically, if you see that, just make sure you don't tear or rip that and just put it back in where it was. You put the screws in loosely, get the chassis back in and you're good to go. So you don't need to worry about any of that stuff. Now, I try my best to explain to people how the sound of these particular speakers work in the amps that I have and in the amps that I've heard. I recently had a guy on YouTube ask me my opinions on what I think of a Texas Heat speaker in the Blues Deluxe, and I said to him, I think it's a great sound, it's nice and fat. Keep this in mind too, that everybody likes different things and each and every one of us has different ears when it comes to tone. So I got asked on YouTube, what do I think about a Texas Heat speaker in a Blues Deluxe? And I said, it's a great combo. I had a chance to do a shootout speaker video recently on that as well. So go check that out if you like what you hear. That's what it sounds like. And that's what it sounds like. Unfortunately though, when this guy got one, he found it to be too bassy, even with the bass on zero. So, it's a little bit hit and miss. I love it. I don't think it's too bassy. Blues Deluxe amps are extremely bassy though. They are. They've got lots of low end. So Brian and I basically, he's got a Celestion Creamback. He leaves his bass all the way down. And that's perfect for him, but lucky it doesn't have to go further than zero. So just have a twiddle with the EQ, have a play with the EQ, make sure that you adjust the mids and tops and try to get something out of it that works. Any speaker replacement generally, when it comes to those Fender amps, will be an upgrade. And I'm talking about those Fender Eminent speakers. Just replace it with anything else and you should be good to go. I always think that it's going to take probably one or two speaker attempts to find the one that really works for you and the sound you're looking for. I always say to people when they ask me, what amp do you like better out of this and that? I'm like, which one do you like better? So have a good listen. Listen to different demos of stuff. Try to find someone who plays kind of similar to you and who records extremely well. Thus, that's probably why you're on my channel if you're a blues guy. But that said, I do like a chunky sort of sound when it comes to amps. I don't like thin and weedy kind of speakers. Try to find some demos of speakers that are in an amp that you would use or something very similar. It doesn't matter if it's exact model, but you should be able to get a really good idea of how they work if you can hear it in, say, a Fender amp if that's what you own, or a Marshall amp if that's what you own. Also, sometimes there's some really great clips on the actual website of these speaker manufacturers as well. That's what I use to basically sway me to get the Swamp Thing and also the Texas Heat, as well as some online videos as well. Let me know your thoughts on swapping out speakers in amps and any results you've had, both positive and negative, by doing so. For me now, it's come down to two speakers which I really like. I love the Eminence Swamp Thing. I love the Eminence Texas Heat. What can I say? They both sound great. I'm almost starting to sway towards the Texas Heat a little more lately. I really dig it. Maybe it's just the great tones of the Bandit. Changing the tubes in your amplifier, when to do it, when not to do it, should I do it? All of these questions should hopefully be answered. So for me, if the valves or tubes that are in the amp sound good to start with, why change them? And if you do want a sound upgrade, is changing the valves really going to make that huge of a difference? Now, there's two parts to the answer to this. Yes, it can make a difference to your sound, but how much will it impact your sound? My theory about this, and I've spoken about this over live streams as well, if you've got a good set of good working valves, say they're JJ valves and you want to change them to another brand, you're probably going to hear 5 to 7% somewhere in that ballpark of difference between changing a good working set of tubes with another good working set of tubes. There are some variations. You can change a preamp tube to a different type. It may clean up the amp, all that kind of stuff, but if you changing apples to apples, so same valves in the same spot, all that kind of stuff with another brand, you're probably not going to notice as big a difference as changing the speaker. Changing the speaker will be a massive difference, like 80% difference in tone or whatever. It's going to make a big, big difference. Changing one functional and working set of tubes for another doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. I wouldn't do it unless something went wrong. So what are these things that can go wrong? Not only can tubes just stop working, they can also start to oscillate. I had the Fender Excelsior and a Vox AC15 that had this problem. So basically, what it is if it almost sounds like there's a piece of glass or a piece of metal loose in one of the tubes and it rattles when you hit a big note. It's one of those things that kills you in recording, but you don't really notice it too much when you're playing out live. In that case, I would definitely go ahead and replace the valves. I'd put a whole new set in if I needed to, or find the exact one that I took out and replace it back in. Now, some amps do need to be rebiased. If you're changing, say, the power tubes in a Fender Hot Rod Deluxe, for example, you will need to rebias the amplifier. There's plenty of tutorials on that. If you're not comfortable with it, take it to somewhere and get it done safely. With amps like the PV Delta Blues and the Vox AC15, they don't have any bias controls. The EL84s, you can literally just plug some in and you're good to go. Same with the Yorkville Trainer amplifiers as well. This makes it extremely easy for you to do it yourself without having to take it to a tech to get it fixed. I usually buy my valves on eBay. I get JJ's if I am to replace anything that I currently have. In all of my Fender amps right now, I'm using all stock tubes. I haven't had the need to replace them. They work great. The question I beg to you is, if I change them to another brand, am I literally going to hear a difference, or is it just the fact that I need to have my amp rebiased? So that's one of the questions as well. Setting the bias differently on an amp will definitely give you a different sound. So if that's something you're looking for, whether you want it more mellow or more crunchy and hot, you can definitely turn up or down the bias to get that kind of effect. I would definitely make sure, though, if you're not electronically minded like myself, get it done by someone who knows what they're doing. What's your thought on changing tubes in an amplifier? Do you just change them because that's what you think will make it sound better? Or do you change them only when things go wrong? Changing the tubes is basically not even on my radar if I don't like the sound of my amp. I wouldn't have bought the amp in the first place if I didn't like what it could do. If I want to upgrade the sound of my amp, the first thing I do is change the speaker. Generally, the cheap speakers that come with the amps aren't great. They're not bad, but they're not great. That will make a massive difference to your sound. whereas changing the tubes, in my opinion, unless they're faulty, is a pretty much a waste of money. I know a lot of people have different thoughts on this because a lot of people can hear things differently as well. Some people are more critical of how slight differences in their tone changes the entire impact of the feel of the amp and all that kind of stuff. But for me, I've been really, really happy with the stock tubes in my amps. They just, if they work, they work, and that's all I need. I don't really need to go change them. I've done that before. I've changed complete sets out of amps and really not heard any difference, unless of course there was that oscillation I was talking about, which definitely goes once you replace them. Please let me know your thoughts on when to and when not to change tubes. And if you've done it before, what kind of sound impact did it have? And did you have your amp rebiased? Take that into consideration as well. As it stands right now, I've owned 4 Gibson guitars and 4 Tokai guitars. Now, Tokai was the first lawsuit guitar coming out of Japan in the 70s. Tokai basically makes guitars like Gibson did in the 50s. One person is responsible for each guitar from start to end. So quality is second to none in my opinion. It's extremely good. I say second to none, but it's on par with the Gibson Custom Shop guitars. And I thought I'd get into this as well, because currently right now, as you may or may not know, I have a Gibson Custom Shop 56 reissue guitar. It's worth a lot of money. It's beautiful. It's a gold top. P90s. It's fantastic. Big, big neck. I love it. I got huge hands. So for me, it feels great to play. The tone is awesome. The finish is beautiful. You open up the case and man, it smells good. It always smells so good. I don't know what they do with those Gibsons, man, but they do. They smell like $1 million. So let's get into this. I had an ES-335 from Gibson as well. It cost me, well, almost $4,000 back in 2008. It's the most money I ever spent on a guitar. It was absolute dog. It was awful. I tried for years. Basically, what contributed to me going through all of these amplifiers over the years was trying to get that guitar to sound nice and bright and good, and unfortunately didn't. It sounded to me like it had wet towels over the pickups. That's the best way I can explain it, and there wasn't anything wrong with it. I had it looked at. It needed work. The neck was a bit bent. It was a mess. So I still had that guitar when I went into another shop and they had the Tokai, and I played the Tokai and I went, wow, this is like night and day difference. And everyone that was in the shop agreed that the Tokai sounded better in all regards and actually played perfectly straight off the shelf. So it's one of those things where I made the decision to keep the Tokai and ditch the Gibson. And a lot of people go, wow, why would you do that? Because tone, feel, quality, all that kind of stuff. So this brings me to what I guess I'm trying to say here is the Japanese Tokai stuff is as good as the Gibson Custom Shop stuff. It's not just as good as the standard Les Pauls that you see. It's the next level. They're made like the guitars were in the 50s. The new one that I've got, the new Japanese Tokai, is made like a 58 Gibson reissue. If you've ever played one of those, this is what this guitar feels like. It has a big neck. It has paffs that sound nice and clear, like a Tele on steroids, as I've heard mentioned a few times. And it's got all the great tones. And when I pick up the Gibson and feel it, the frets and play it, the neck, all that kind of stuff, and then I pick up the Tokai, there's literally no difference in the feel. That's how it is. The neck is slightly different, but I think maybe there might have been a difference in the shape between 56 and 58. I'm not 100% certain on that. If I was to do a blind test between the Tokai made in Japan 58 and the actual 58 reissue or the R8, I don't know if I could tell the difference. It's that good. So let's just put the prices in perspective. I could probably buy a secondhand 58 reissue in Australia for somewhere around $4,000. It would probably be between $3,800 and $4,000. New, they're about $8,000, which is insane. You can't really get them new in a lefty anymore, but there is one shop here that has one of the new gold tops, and they wanted something like $7,000 for it, which is ridiculous. For around $1,770, $80, somewhere around there, I managed to get a guitar that feels and looks and sounds just as good as a Gibson Custom Shop guitar. It's not Gibson, which might do some people's head in, but it's Tokai. So the quality is going to be good. I'm wrapped. I'm absolutely stoked. People might ask also, How does it compare to my Chinese one? The funny thing is, I'd played the 58 reissue in Florida, and then I played another 58 reissue in Melbourne, and it was amazing. But at the time, I wanted the gold top, so I got the one with the P90s. I said, that's it, I'm done. And as I started gassing for the 58, I went back and they sold it. So I ended up buying the Tokai, the Chinese one, from another store without having played the Japanese one. There just wasn't a lefty around anywhere. So I had a go and I liked it. I thought, wow, this is really, really good. And it's still a good guitar. It sounds good for the price. It feels pretty good. It's got a thinner neck. There's things about the finish that were pointed out to me from my friend Lyndon that I didn't realize. But yeah, it does cosmetically look a little different, and I wouldn't have noticed these things unless I was looking for them. But I don't really care too much about that. That doesn't really worry me. It's more about how it feels and sounds and plays and all that kind of stuff. So it's got lots of positives for the price. It's still definitely as good or better than Epiphone's sort of stock models. If you, not some of their higher end Epiphones, but their stock models, definitely check out the Chinese Tokais. They're really good. They do the business. I've done gigs with them. I've done recordings with them. I used them on my new album, all that kind of stuff. So they do work. They're fine. I'm not going to bash them or badmouth them at all. But this is the next level. It's the difference between playing an Epiphone and a custom shop Gibson if you know guitars. That's the extreme between the Japanese stuff and the Chinese stuff. It's huge. Now I've actually had a chance to try both and own both and do an AB between both. That's the conclusion. Japanese Tokai stuff kills the studio Gibsons, kills the standard Gibsons on the ones that I've been lucky enough to play as a lefty, and also is as good as the Gibson custom shops. They're not better, they're not worse, they're the same. If you like the high quality, you know, high-end Gibsons, definitely give them a look. Man, there's a gold top in the same shop that I was at in a right-hander that I know it's going to find a good home. It's exactly like my 56 big neck P90s. Beautiful finish. It looks identical. And if that had been a lefty back in the day, I would have spent my money on that. There's no questions about it. Let me know what you think of some of the Tokai guitars, if you've had a chance to use or play them. Also, let me know if there's any other brands out there that you can compare to Gibson custom shop guitars at half or less of the price. Please let me know what you think. Cheers. Great news in the world of guitars. Gibson, in conjunction with Mark Knopfler, have just released a 58 reissue guitar to Les Paul, and it's hand signed 1 of 50, 2 of 50, all the way up to the 50 by Mark himself. There's a video that Gibson put out which was really enjoyable to watch. I always like watching Mark Knopfler. He's one of my favorite players ever. The first CD that I ever bought, you know, compact discs, remember those things that are up behind me here, was Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms. I've always liked his guitar playing, and over the last few weeks, I've really gotten into his sound. I really love his Les Paul tone, just that thick, woody sound that he's got. It's almost second to none, yet it's still extremely clear. Brothers in Arms, Money for Nothing, and lots of his solo projects is where my head is at in terms of Les Paul tone. So I actually went out a few days before Gibson released this, it was the day before, and I bought myself a Tokai Love Rock electric guitar, which is a 58 or 59 style Gibson, with the intention of getting that Mark Knopfler sound. The next day, bam, Gibson come out with that video, and I thought, wow, that's just great timing. And it's about time, because Knopfler is one of the guitar gods, in my opinion. He's just fantastic. I'm extremely happy with my Tokai guitar. It's up there with my custom shop Les Paul in terms of quality and sound. It's fantastic. With one exception, the price isn't anywhere near as deadly. That said, there's no lefties from what I could see in the video of the Mark Knopfler signature guitars. They're all right-handed ones, even though Knopfler is actually a left-hander, but he plays right-handed. From what I've heard online, the Mark Knopfler Signature 58s go for around $10,000. So if you have money to burn and you're a huge Dire Straits or Mark Knopfler fan, you could get that kind of sound. He actually plays a couple of them in the video. See what you think of the tone in the video. I think it's not really the sound that he would normally have if he was playing his own. They might have just put him through a Princeton in the bathroom or something, so who knows? But it's one of those things where you don't know what amp he's actually playing through. But man, the dude's playing is second to none in my opinion. I love his Les Paul tone. I love his Strat tone as well. He's just such a great player with many memorable solos. Please let me know what you think of the Gibson video clip. I'll link it on screen and also in the description below if you are watching on YouTube. Or you can just Google Mark Knopfler Gibson Custom Shop Guitar and it should come up. At the time of recording this part of the podcast, the price wasn't definitive. The videos have only been up a couple of days, and what can I say? They look really cool. Let me know if you've heard how much they will be and if you could justify the price to have a signed guitar from the man himself. Let me know. On a previous part of the podcast, I was talking about the Mark Knopfler signature guitar and how he inspired me to buy a Les Paul recently, which was a Tokai one. Now, we all know who John Mayer is if you're a guitar player. He's one of the younger guys that's on the scene doing extremely good things musically. I guess he'd be getting close to 40 right about now. I think him and I are about the same age. So I'm 37. I'm guessing he'd be 1 year older or younger than where I'm at, but that's irrelevant. It doesn't really matter. He's still younger than Eric Clapton, for example. The day after I bought my Tokai Love Rock electric guitar, I was alerted on a live stream that I was doing on Facebook that John Mayer had just updated his profile pic and he was holding a Strat. And I thought, oh yeah, cool, I'll go check that out. So I went and checked it out, and it's a Tokai Strat, believe it or not. So I wonder if the stocks on Tokai gear, or whether the price will now jump. I don't actually know if this is a guitar that he's currently using. I've been a little bit of out of the loop with him over the last few years. His new song doesn't really do a whole lot for me, so I kind of lost a little bit of interest. I haven't really been checking out a lot of his stuff over the last few, I guess probably the last 12 months now, but I really like his live blues. I really like all of that kind of stuff he does with the trio and, you know, the Continuum album. All that kind of stuff is just awesome. With that in mind, it's great to see a high-profile player using Tokai instruments. There's been a few over the years, but none are probably higher profile than what Stevie Ray Vaughan was. He played a 335 style Tokai, and man oh man, it's pretty cool. Let me know your thoughts about Mayer jumping onto the Tokai bandwagon, and let's see if the stocks or the price of these guitars go up. I wonder if they'll end up having a signature model if he sticks with them, so who knows. I don't know why he got away from Fender. Maybe it was some sort of business deal that went wrong. Maybe it was just he didn't feel like he was getting what he wanted out of him. But one thing's for sure, the PRS tone he's got right now, touring with Dead & Company, it's in my opinion, it's probably the weakest tone I've ever heard from him. His old rig with his Strats and his Duesenberg, all that kind of stuff, just sounded awesome. So John, if you ever watch this, which I highly doubt, go back to your old tone, dude. Thanks for watching. My name's Shane. This has been the In the Blues Tone podcast. Don't forget to share this podcast around with any of your friends who are into guitar nerdery, or into pedals and all of that kind of stuff. If you want to find out more about my videos, you can go to youtube.com/inTheBlues, much like the name of this podcast. I now have loads more free time at my disposal. I'm back to doing what I do best, which is the YouTube videos, the podcast, all of that kind of stuff. So stay tuned. I've got plenty of great stuff on the way from overseas. I have some pedals coming in from Wampler, some more pedals coming in from Stomp Audio Labs, some more pedals coming in from VS Audio from Greece. So there's stuff coming from all over the world, North and South America, Europe, and Australia. So stay tuned. Plenty of great stuff coming up on the channel. Don't forget, please share the channel around on your social network. It's a great way for the channel to build and grow. And the more subscribers we have, the better the channel can get. So I absolutely appreciate that. I'm also going to have a few guests coming up on a few videos as well. And I'm really looking forward to organizing that. I'm actually about to do that as soon as I finish the podcast. So thanks again, folks. And we'll catch you all on another one. See you next time.